All right, joining me now is the lineup I had with me the other day. I promised them I'd bring them back for a lengthy conversation. I will endeavor to open the phone lines up tonight. We are going to be joined by Dan and Kathleen and Lisa and Tammy. Guys, welcome back to the broadcast. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
So what kind of feedback?
Happy to be here.
Thank you, guys. What kind of feedback did we get, Jan, from our last appearance here on the show on this topic?
You know, I had several people reach out to me, Brandon, and they were like, oh my God, great show. I hope they're going to bring you back. We need to hear more of this. People were definitely engaged and curious. They want to know more about really what's happening and more importantly, what they can do in their own backyard. You know, because most people think human trafficking is like an over there kind of issue and they don't really realize it's literally happening their backyard.
Did any of you have a chance to read the article? I thought I sent it to you. Maybe I just sent it to you, Janet, about the U.S. Marshals that just rescued a bunch of children out of Colorado today. Did any of you read that? And who would like to comment on it? Maybe all of you want to comment on it.
I'll start. The U.S. Marshals.
And by the way, do me a favor, since it's new, go ahead and tell us your name again and the organization you're with when you start.
Sure. Kathleen Nguyen. I'm the executive director of Project 25, which is to end sexual exploitation by 2025. And one of our projects is Vast Valley Against Sex Trafficking. And so we work with law enforcement and bring resources to help find missing children. And the U.S. Marshals do a great job. And so unfortunately, it's becoming so commonplace that we're finding children. I think it's lost the impact of now more children being found. We have numerous stories. There was a case we were working on where a girl got away. There were 15 girls being transported in a truck. This happened in Texas, and the girl got away, and they had killed one of the girls in front of the others and dismembered her and told the others if they tried to get away, they would do this to them. And this girl still ran away. So we're not even hearing all the stories that are happening. It's exciting when we find people because it gives us hope. But we have no idea the breadth and depth in which this is happening in our country.
Wow. Let's go to this headline here at Epoch Times. That's where I heard about it first. Epoch Times reporting 11 missing children. By the way, Reagan, can you see if I'm supposed to be emailed any supporting stuff, documentation here to show on the screen from Logan? 11 missing children recovered in Colorado as part of Operation Lost and Found. U.S. Marshals Service in Colorado announced on Tuesday that 11 critically endangered and, quote, missing children were recovered as part of a two-week multi-agency effort dubbed Operation Lost and Found. According to the Federal Law Enforcement Agency, the children were between the ages of 12 and 17 and had all been reported missing to local authorities. The effort was conducted throughout the Denver metropolitan area from November 7th to November 18th in coordination with the Aurora Police Department and the National Centers for Missing and Exploited Children. But these children were considered to be some of the most at-risk and challenging recovery cases in the area based on indications of high-risk factors such as victimization of child sex trafficking, child exploitation, sex abuse, physical abuse, and medical or mental health conditions, end quote, the U.S. Marshals stated in a November 29th news release. Now, I'm thankful they came home, folks, but this raised an awful lot of questions for me. One of them being, how did they know that these children were the most at risk? How did they know there were indications of high risk factors such as victimization of child sex trafficking, child exploitation, sex abuse, physical abuse, and or mental or medical health conditions? How would they know that? I mean, if the kids are missing, don't you have to know who they are, where they are, what's going on to know these things? This paragraph really, to a layperson like me on this topic, didn't make a whole lot of sense. Maybe you want to explain it? Who wants to raise their hand and go first on this one? Okay, tell us your name and organization again, please.
I'm Tammy Tony Butler, and I'm from Nurses United Against Human Trafficking, and I also have a nonprofit Reflective Spaces ministry. I can't speak to this specific article, but I can tell you there are certain vulnerabilities that predispose a child or adult to the high potential of being lured by traffickers. And that are those that are involved in the juvenile justice system, the child welfare system, those that are couch surfing, those that are homeless, those that already are struggling with addiction or indigenous or part of the LGBTQI2S community. So there are certain children that are at a heightened risk, and therefore those are ones that are in and out of the system. Maybe they've run away in the past. And I want to remind everyone, they're usually running away from something or running to something.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. Thank you, Tammy. Does anyone else want to take that? Because I almost read that as though they knew who these kids were and where they were at. If they knew who they were and where were they at, why did they just not go get them? Again, am I misreading the press release?
Dan, you want to take that?
Well, the first thing I would like to make sure that all the viewers understand is there was no evidence in my understanding, that any of these kids were being trafficked. They just had a lot of vulnerabilities. It's my understanding that several of them were missing from the foster care system. They're missing from the child protective services system and things of that nature. And everything that Tammy stated is true and accurate, that you have certain groups that are vulnerable because of trauma that they've been, endured as a child, their economic situation, their parenting situation, abuse, drugs and alcohol, and lots of things like that. Now, I think that you should also understand that in every state in the United States, people go missing on any, throughout the day at any given time. When I was running a human trafficking unit in a state, we kept track of high-risk missing kids, and we tried to find those. But on any given day in the state that I was in, we would have anywhere from 40 to 50 of those per day, and around 1,000 total people per day that were missing in our state. You can only look for so many on any given time just based on resources. So what the marshals are doing by going out and picking areas of the country and trying to provide extra services and trying to locate these missing kids is a really big deal, and we should continue to do it, because there's lots and lots of them out there. And for every one that we can find, maybe that's one that we can stop from being trafficked in the future, because they are super, super vulnerable. And if law enforcement doesn't find them, if we don't find them, traffickers will. I mean, they're looking for the same vulnerabilities and the same kids that law enforcement's looking for.
Wait a minute. That's very interesting, Dan. The traffickers are looking for the same vulnerable people that law enforcement is looking for. How would they be
100%.
How are they looking for them, Dan? Do they surf social media sites? What are they doing to look for those victims?
Traffickers will look for victims not only on the internet, which that's increased significantly in the last 10 years, but they'll look for them at train depots, bus depots, homeless shelters. They look for the kids, the areas of certain cities when kids run away, they tend to congregate in certain areas. They're looking for those runaways. They're looking for vulnerabilities in kids. So traffickers, they understand what this refers to. And when we teach law enforcement, we call it the look. They're looking for that look. They're looking for those vulnerabilities. They're looking for the same things that law enforcement are looking for. We look to find those kids, to help them and to bring them to a safe place. And the traffickers are looking to find them, to manipulate them and use their vulnerabilities against them.
Wow. All right, let's go to some articles you guys have sent me. Here's one, this one right here. CNN, 17-year-old boy died by suicide hours after being scammed. The FBI says it's part of a troubling increase in sextortion. So instead of extortion, sextortion cases. All right. Let's see. Lisa, you want to speak to this, please?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Thanks for having us today.
Yes, thank you.
On your show.
Again, remind our audience your name and where you're from. You are the law firm that you run, correct?
Absolutely. I'm a partner at the Hava Law Firm. We are a law firm that specializes in sexual abuse and human trafficking litigation. And one thing that we've seen an increase in, especially since the internet has really taken off in the last decade or so, is everywhere where somebody can be connected to another human being online, predators are there and they're attempting to exploit the children that are online. And so what we're seeing is a rise in what we call sextortion, which is where ultimately a child who is naive, innocent, has no idea the dangers that are lurking in, on the internet that they're facing, will be reached out to. I have a case where one of the children I represent was reached out to by somebody who posed as a child they went to high school with. So my client was an innocent child who had next to no sexual experience and was contacted by somebody he knew the name of and thought it was a girl he went to high school with. What he didn't know is that this girl wasn't a girl he went to high school with. It was a sex trafficker. And when they exploited my client and said, you know, posing again as a girl, I'd like to share some images with you. Would you like to see me? Absolutely. I'm going to ask you to share some images back. Okay, sure. This sounds exciting. I'm a 13-year-old boy and don't understand the dangers of all the things that I'm facing. The next thing you know, this child is being sextorted. The traffickers are threatening him to expose if they don't send more. Sometimes it's threatened for money. Sometimes they're threatened for more images. Sometimes they're threatened for an escalation of sexual acts to be filmed. But whatever be the ante, these sex traffickers take this, as soon as they receive what they're looking for, they turn it around on the child and they threaten the child with anything that they think this child is going to be vulnerable to. And let me say, on the internet, children have no idea how searchable they are. For example, I can go on the internet right now and just through a couple of the tools that I use as a lay person and as a civilian attorney, I can pretty much find out the full workup and background on almost any person that has social media. And so traffickers do the same thing. They're very good at it. They will research a child. They will impersonate people. They're in this for the long game because don't forget, it's a multi-billion dollar industry. So it's worth it to them to put the effort in. It's not a quick crime. And so after they put the effort in and they get this child to a place where they know the vulnerabilities, they know what's going on. They use that to exploit them. My client, the case I was referring to, had the person turn on them and say, I'm going to tell your pastor. They knew who that was. I'm going to tell your parents. They knew who those were and where they worked. They knew their schedule. They knew when their father left for work. They knew exactly how to make this child realize that there was nowhere they could go, run, hide, or turn to. This trafficker didn't know what was going on and have eyes on them. And so I'm sure you can understand why when a child is put in a position where they believe that their next choice might be the life or death of their family, they're going to make the choice to save their family. They're going to
Are you telling me, Lisa, they threaten these kids will kill your parents if you don't do this?
Yes. I've had them threaten to kill the family pet. I've had them threaten to kill the parents. I've seen cases where they threaten just to exploit them to everybody they know. They pick what the child is vulnerable for.
And they know all this. And so they could tell by tracking their social media, right? Lisa, oh yeah, he's really close to his mom, or she's really close to her dad, or they have a special pet or a favorite, you know, uncle or aunt. So you know, they know their life and can go after the ones that they know they're not just picking from random. They know exactly which person to threaten them with for harm, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you couldn't have said it more eloquently. They pick exactly the person they think they can get to. And here's the thing. If it doesn't work, they just move on to the next one. There's so many children on social media. There's so many children to be exploited that there's never a lack of victims to go after.
And we also have to look at the fact that suicide is the second leading cause of death in youth ages 10 to 14. Let that sink in. Data from the CDC, recent data.
10 to 14.
Yes. And the second leading cause of death. We have to understand there are hidden victims of human trafficking and sextortion in these cases. They do not disclose. And the shame and the guilt and the fear, all of it, it leads them to take their own life or to have suicidal ideations. There was a study put out in 2022 by Middleton that looked at the data, and they studied homeless youth that had been exploited. And they found that they had almost a 5 times more likelihood of suicidal ideations than their peers that had not been sexually exploited or had these images. We have to look at this pandemic, and we have to act now before more children die.
Here's that article again at CNN. Ryan last received a message on a school night in February from someone he believed to be a girl. Within 17 hours, a 17-year-old student, straight-A student, and Boy Scout had died by suicide. Quote, somebody reached out to him pretending to be a girl, and they started a conversation, end quote, his mother. Pauline Stewart told CNN, fighting back tears as she described what happened to her son days after she and Ryan had finished visiting several colleges he was considering attending after graduating from high school. The online conversation quickly grew intimate and then turned criminal. The scammer, posing as a girl, sent Ryan a nude photo and then asked Ryan to share an explicit image of himself in return. Immediately after Ryan shared an intimate photo of his own, the cyber criminal demanded $5,000, threatening to make the photo public, and it sent Ryan to his and send it to Ryan's family and friends. And of course, after that, he committed suicide.
You know, one thing I just want to mention is that I want all parents to think back, because I mean it's been a few decades for all of us, right? But think back to when you were a teenager. Your entire world, not like your immediate thing and I'm looking to the future, but your literal world is the high school you're in. It's the middle school you're in. It's your peers. When I was in high school, and again, it's been many decades, but the people and what people thought of me mattered more to me than anything else in the world. As an adult, that seems ridiculous and we forget. But to a teenager, there is nothing more personal than that. So there's a reason why in our federal statute, that allows us to sue companies and individuals that participate in sex trafficking. It recognizes reputational harm. The reputational harm to a person from sex trafficking is tremendous.
And every time these images are shared, they are raped all over again or victimized. And that leads to detrimental mental health effects and physical manifestations of trauma, because you can't ever escape it. It's always there and takes a life of its own. So you're always being victimized. The moment each of these, this content is allowed to stay up and Twitter and these other companies refuse to take it down, then they're basically re-victimizing us all over again. And we have no recourse to stop the abuse.
I think it's also important that we let parents know and grandparents know, make them aware this is happening. And let your kids know that if you do something you're embarrassed about, you're ashamed about, to at least come to us before you do anything dramatic or rash. Because kids make stupid decisions all the time. But as parents, if we don't give them an opportunity or an opening to say, I may get upset, but I'm going to listen, you have to keep that line of communication open. Unfortunately, this young man felt he had no other choice. A Boy Scout just looking at colleges, he just saw his whole future being taken away, and he made this choice. And if he had felt comfortable enough to go to his parents and say, I made a terrible mistake, we wouldn't have this story. And unfortunately, he's not unique. He's the rule. Lisa's exactly right that the young people, their whole world is what people think about them and being liked and being. And so when they are faced with a situation where they don't see any other options, unfortunately, suicide is epidemic, and it's epidemic in Arizona for sure.
Wow.
Well, and Brandon, the other thing too that I really want parents to know is Jan Edwards, president and founder of Paving the Way Foundation, is our prefrontal cortex, the decision-making part of our brain, isn't fully developed until we're between 25 and 30. And our parents are like, oh, they know better. Well, they might. And then the next moment they don't. And then the next moment they do. You know, we all remember puberty. Remember the movie Big, where Tom Hanks invited the girl to go back with him? And she's like, nope, puberty once, that was plenty. It's the same thing, right? You're one day, you can have the exact same day. And one day you're super, super happy. And the next day you're very, very sad. It's just part of growing up. But they think those feelings are permanent. And the decisions that they're making in that moment can have short-term and long-term ramifications. So the thing that we really educate parents about is just remember, this part isn't quite done yet. And it's really up to us to give them the space and the grace to learn and to grow and to create a safe space for our children to come to us. And, you know, Brandon, this is it's an odd conversation. We weren't taught how to talk about online exploitation, human trafficking, or child trafficking as parents. There's no class on this. Well, there is now, but in reality, right? There's no parenting class on this. And for kids, there's no class for them either. They think sending nudes is normal because everyone's doing it. We've totally over-sexualized our kids, not fully understanding the impact for them on psychologically, emotionally, spiritually, and physically. And though if we, I definitely want to leave parents with some tools later on before we close out, but that's really an important piece for parents to fully grasp, and grandparents and teachers, especially teachers that are in middle school, is our kids are equipped to do what they know how to do, and they're not equipped to deal with these online predators. I was at a fifth grade class 2 weeks ago, and I asked every single one of them, I said, how many of you have gotten either a picture or a text from someone you don't know in your DMs? Fifth grade, Brandon, that's 10 years old. Every single hand went up. And this little girl said, because I showed a screen about that the average age of recruitment now online is 10 to 13. And she kind of looked and she pondered and she said, you know, ever since I turned 10, my DMs keep filling up with people I don't know. And I said, well, what are you doing about that, sweetheart? She goes, well, I mostly delete them. And then sometimes I block them. She goes, but they keep coming back. And I asked her, I said, are you talking to your mama about this? She said, no. So we've got 10-year-olds battling online predatory behavior alone. And that's why this conversation we're having tonight is so important.
And tell me about the platforms out there. What maybe Dan or, well, let's go with you, Dan. Dan, what are the platforms out there that these kids are on that are sharing pictures of themselves that are being, you know, and this is now where they're being trolled? What kind of platforms are we talking about?
There's a plethora. I mean, and it's fluid. They're adding more all the time, but I don't want to think that, or I want to say something that, you know, we've had this kind of doom and gloom conversation about how horrible things are for our youth today. And it is, there's no doubt about that. I agree with everything that everybody said, but there are some relatively easy solutions to stop some of this. I just had this conversation today teaching a bunch of law enforcement folks in Kansas. And the easiest solution of all of this is to not let your kids have a smartphone. Why is that so complicated? That is, this is not a complicated subject. There is no reason that a 10-year-old needs a smartphone. There's no reason that a 12-year-old or a 15-year-old. And here's something that I find really interesting. The law enforcement across the country that I know, that I teach with, that I do stuff with, none of their kids has smartphones. None of them do. Big tech executives, they don't let their kids on social media. Why is that? Why would the big tech executives not let their kids on social media? Why is it that law enforcement people that work in the human trafficking field full time don't let their kids have smartphones? Because we know what the dangers are. Just like Jan just said, these kids are, their brains are not developed, and they're getting bombarded by all these traffickers and predators, and all this stuff is happening, and they're not going to make good decisions. We would never, ever, ever allow these people that they're talking to come over to our house and enter our house and go and hang out in our kids' bedroom. But that's what we're doing every single night when we let our kids have a smartphone. There's plenty of other options out there. There's a Gab phone. There's other kinds of phones that they can call their friends. They can text message back and forth. They can do all this stuff. Just getting rid of your child having a smartphone will solve so much of this.
So these
other
phones,
worry about so-
these other phones you're talking about, Dan. So the parent says, "What I need, my kid needs a phone so I can stay in touch with my kid or whatever." So you're saying there are phones out there where they can call, where they can text their family and friends, but these phones don't have all the social media on them. Is that what you're saying?
They don't have the apps. They don't allow you to do all that kind of stuff. And they don't allow all these people to reach out to you all the time when you don't want that. So then these kids don't have to make these decisions. You know, my business partner in the Human Trafficking Training Center, she's, you know, got 10 to 15 years in the human trafficking field. She has three teenagers. None of her kids have ever had a smartphone. And they're great kids that, they're not weird. They're not thought of as weird in their classroom or their school. They're not thought of that way at all. And they don't even care about it now. They're 18, 16, and 15, and they don't care that they don't have a smartphone. I think they're kind of glad that they don't have a smartphone.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of that world in the social media is fake. These are people that are posing on fake pictures, fake boats. You mean that it's not their family's boat. They're at someone they know, a friend of a friend's family they went out with or whatever. I mean, I even see now where you can actually go to places and take a picture of yourself. It looks like you're on a private jet, and it's just a prop. and you pay the $150 or whatever to look like you're sitting in a private jet. I mean, so much of what's on social media is fake anyway. And then it puts pressure on the kids that they're not up to the standards of everybody else. And then they're unhappy because they think they're missing out on something. And then you got all these dangers we're talking about now. I guess what I'm trying to say is, Dan, is I can see where some of these kids would say, I'm so glad I have a phone that doesn't do all that, because it's just a bunch of drama added to the fact it's dangerous.
Yep.
For sure. Sure, 100%.
Yeah, Gab has a phone, and Bark is coming out with a phone, bark.us. And then locally, there's a woman who's creating, it's called Palm. It's a little, like it looks like an Apple Watch. And all it is a two-way between you and your parents. That's it.
And I'll say the Gab phones in particular, they look like a smartphone. They just don't have an internet browser, and they have preloaded apps. I just ordered one for my 10-year-old because I don't want her to have access to the internet ever. And I want to make sure that I can control who she talks to on the phone. But now she can call her friends, but she can't use the internet. She doesn't have the ability to even try. And that's the most important part.
And where did you get that phone, Lisa?
Gab, G-A-B-B.
Gab, is that the same Gab that we know of as the social media site Gab, or different one?
Different. It's a different company, a developer of a software product that Dan Nash was talking about as well. But Gab has a couple competitors. If you Google Gab phone, I'm sure you'll see who they are. There's about three different phones like that out there.
And is that G-A-B-E?
G-A-B-B.
Gab phone. G-A-B-B phone. How long have they been around?
It's above my pay grade, sir.
been around for a couple of years.
I think it's also important to get our kids off TikTok.
Here we go. Look at this. Just one second. Look at this. The Gab phone, a simplified phone for kids. No social media, no internet, no games, no worry.
Huh. You're welcome, Gab. You're welcome.
I think they should stole Christmas.
That's who we are.
Yeah, I think they should become a sponsor of my show. Don't you guys?
They should. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I could probably sell a ton of these for them as well.
Yes.
Yeah. And another thing to remember is, for those parents who are going to give their children cell phones, NetSmarts has some really good things and tips about safe social media use and all that. But what you can do is you can take those devices at night and put them in the parent's bedroom to charge them, so that they're not on Snapchat and Twitter and all these other Omegle and all these other platforms sending images. Because we lock our doors and we tell our kids don't talk to strangers, but we take a cell phone at age 10, according to Pew Research and Thorne studies that are out there, and we just handed basically the child a device that has brought the predator into their bedroom. And that's basically what we're doing. And we just have to realize that these kids' hormones are exploding. It's at the same point where, as Jan was talking about, the prefrontal cortex is not developed, but also their impulse control. And then you add in the hormonal cascade that's going on in their bodies, and that they're sexually curious at that age. And then you give them access to a loaded gun, which is basically the internet, with no safeguards in place. It's a recipe for disaster. And I think that that's where we have to realize. And Kathleen brought up a great point, and I want her to finish that, about TikTok. TikTok is considered a national security risk.
Yes.
And Kathleen, go ahead.
Thank you. All I was going to say is TikTok allows our children to be tracked. That information is all being stored. The military stopped the use of TikTok for their military members and their military families. So, and our kids are on it, and all that information is being collected by China, and it's not safe. But they have games and videos that entice our children, and there's this fear of being left out, especially amongst our young people. So if their friend is doing it, they want to do it. And so this hypersexualization, and we've normalized so many things that just 10 years ago, we would have been appalled that our children were doing, or even talking to strangers online. And we can't overemphasize enough, you would not bring these people into your home, but now you're letting, with these apps, you're letting anybody in. And to Dan's point, there's new apps coming on the market every day. One of the great things we had that they've started to eliminate is school resource officers, but those school resource officers knew you know, the kids would show them, you know, and they had that contact. And COVID and taking that away actually made our children more vulnerable, because now kids could be on apps. They were lonely. They were trying to connect. And we don't know who our children are talking to. And these big social apps are really just a breeding ground for this kind of activity. And we have to be keenly aware of who our children are contacting online. And TikTok is one of the worst offenders, Facebook, Snapchat. But I hope Lisa gets to sue them soon.
Wow. And by the way, Lisa, I had on someone last night who is an expert in filing one of the legal cases related to Section 230, which I know as an attorney you're very aware of, that would have them be described as publishers, which I guess would open the doors for attorneys like you to sue them because they're allowing these things on once they've been notified and not taking it down. And he kept sharing stories last night where some of these outlets have been notified and they don't take it down.
Yeah, we're in the middle of litigation right now in the Ninth Circuit, which is in California, against Twitter. We're in the middle of several cases right now of the same genre. So Section 230 has been a thorn in my side for quite some time. It's a good law, but it's been, in my humble opinion, misinterpreted over the years. It currently stands, and I'm going to make this very simplistic, but it currently stands that the law was intended that a third-party publisher, we'll use Facebook as an example, a person can come onto Facebook, they can post defamatory statements. And Facebook can't be sued for that, because the whole point was to help a flourishing internet develop, to help e-commerce thrive, and to help speech prevail. And so we don't want to hold third-party posters, which would be the original publisher. We don't want to put the internet provider, which would be Facebook or a similar platform, into the shoes of the publisher. Because if they were in the shoes of the publisher, now they're going to be held liable for that same defamatory statement, even if they weren't aware of it, potentially. Well, that's what Congress wanted to avoid. So when they created Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, they created this position where we treat an internet service provider, we're not going to treat them like a publisher. We're going to allow a third-party platform to be just that, a platform, and we're going to hold that defamatory content accountable to the people that are posting on it. Unfortunately, over the years, there was a bad case about 20 years ago that ultimately, and I, you know, respectfully disagree with it. It is the case and it is the law right now. So, you know, understanding that's what it is, and that is the current interpretation. It says that there is an immunity created. So instead of defining a publisher as a publisher, it now is given that extra step, and it's interpreted our statute to create an immunity. So what that's turned into is we now have internet platforms that are doing whatever they want online, offline, online, and maybe people are publishing something initially and it gets changed. Maybe, and I'm not saying the internet provider is stepping into those shoes, but when they become aware of something criminal on their platform, like child pornography, or their platform is being used to exploit human beings and sell people, they should be acting. Criminal laws require them to act. And yet, under the pretense of Section 230, they're effectively being given immunity in most cases. And what it has turned into is the internet is exactly what Congress did not intend. It's become the wild, wild west of criminal activity. And there's no accountability. So shockingly, it's more profitable to allow the criminal activity to occur than to do the right thing and spend money to stop it. And what we have seen is that good faith prerogative that should exist with all of our companies in America is just not there. They're choosing profits over people, and our children are being hurt because of it. So we are in the middle of lawsuits as well against them. We're writing an amicus brief right now at the Supreme Court on the seminal case that hopefully will fix this issue. We're very hopeful. But as this continues, you know, follow the news, I think you're going to see some big movement in the next 6 months.
Wow. And that's what we were told last night as well. Let's talk about this case real quick before we get ready to open the phone lines. Here's a CNN article. Family of Riverside catfishing murder victims give update. Remind our audience what this is about and what does this have to do with sex trafficking?
Sure. So a little girl was catfished online by.
What does that mean? What does catfish mean?
So they're pretending to be someone they're not. You know, online, you can post any picture that's not you. You can pretend to be anybody online. And you can hide behind that. And that's what these online predators do. So this individual from Virginia, who's a former law enforcement officer, pretended to be something he was not. And courted this little girl. Again, you got to remember, this isn't done yet. And the past 3 years, quite frankly, Brandon, have really caused havoc on our kids. You know, I've just spent, I spent all day yesterday with about 250 kids in an alternative high school. And we talked about this. We talked about the past 3 years have left them in this space of uncertainty. We're uncertain, they're uncertain. It's just a weird space to be in. And the safest place for them to go, that has been to go, is here, their phone. They share everything. That's where they connect with their friends. That's where they learn things. And so this little girl was online and this guy pretended to be a friend, just like the CNN case. And they became friends. He drove all the way out to meet her. He sadly, unfortunately, killed her family and kidnapped her. And luckily, a neighbor in the in that area saw her being put in the car and she called the cops and they found her. Now, this little girl's in custody, you know, state custody, and she's lost her family, not knowing who she was talking to. And part of the what we teach our kids is you've got to have your accounts on private. If you're going to be online, accounts have to be on private. You've got to turn off your geolocator, because the moment you upload a picture on any of these social platforms, if you have your geolocator on, someone can find out your location, your exact location. And so this little girl, not knowing, you know, she didn't talk to her mom who she was talking to. Parents aren't talking to our kids about this. That's why the show is so important. And sadly, that's the outcome.
Has anyone, as pitiful, has anyone... one made a movie about all this that's not so Hollywood, Dan, as to be unbelievable? I mean, because again, I think most people think of Taken, Taken 2, they think of those kind of movies. Has anyone made a movie where they come with experts on their team to write the script that are very, very realistic to help people understand how this is done versus what Hollywood says is done?
Well, I wrote a film.
And you would, I was going to say, I participated in a film that was made that was actually a documentary of three girls that were trafficked called I Am Jane Doe, that you can still get. And those were three girls that were sold on Backpage.com as teenagers. And the,
that's how you took...
And they're like, I'm sorry, Jan, go ahead.
No, but that, and that's how you took Backpage down, right?
Part of it, yes. And I didn't do it by myself. I was just, I just helped the lawyers do with, I'm not a lawyer, nor do I play one on TV. We leave that to Lisa. And she does a great job. But I think it's important to know that there's been many real films and Jan's got a great film. And they continue to make films, but Taken and some of those films, Pretty Woman, that is not a realistic aspect of what's really happening. And so I think it's really important to find true cases. What I really do appreciate, though, is that our television shows have started to incorporate storylines that are realistic, that talk about trafficking, that talk about sexual exploitation. And so it's nice to see that being incorporated as someone who started on this movement 10 years ago when we couldn't even talk about pornography. So I think people are now being made aware that this is happening and it can happen to anybody, rich, poor, white, black, brown, red. It doesn't matter. This is not a crime that is happening to a certain group of people. Although children in foster care are more vulnerable, this can happen to anybody. And people need to be aware.
Is this, who was it, a very, very well-known famous actress that, I don't know if they got an award, I can't remember, but I saw this actress get up and give a speech on sex trafficking, and I was blown away with what they were saying and that they actually said it because they are so famous. Does anyone know the actress I'm speaking of?
I think that was Blake Lively.
You're right. It was.
Yeah, at the Child Rescue Coalition Gala.
Okay. So that to me was very shocking. So here's my question. Is this something, you know, the COVID vaccine mandates have really brought people from the right and the left together? You know, I'm interviewing people that have traditionally come from the left that are opposed to these mandates, and they're coming on my show. So I'm a very conservative guy with some people who come from the progressive world. And yet we're uniting on this idea of forcing vax onto them with the pericarditis and the myocarditis and all the things that are going on with that. And so there's the right and left kind of joining together on this issue. Is this one of those issues where people who traditionally maybe define themselves as more progressive and others who can define themselves as conservative are starting to find their voice together on this issue?
Well, there's I'm sorry, Dan.
No, go ahead. Yes, I'm just going to say yes. Tammy, you go.
There's actual legislation that is before Congress that we're just sort of sitting on, I believe, because I went to Congress and met with almost 75 congressional leaders and their teams and got nowhere, really. And I emailed 333 members of the House and probably 100 senators some one-page documents with all the statistics as to why this is such a public health crisis of trafficking. But there is the Earn It Act, which is a bipartisan bill, and it is H.R. 6544 and S3538 has lots of co-sponsors that are bipartisan. And it, there's other key legislative initiatives that are there, the Children and Teens Online Privacy Protection Act, the Kids Online Safety Act. We have the No Trafficking Zone Act, and of course the Earn It Act. And they have the ability to act, and they do need to come together. So I would like to see them try to come together across both sides of the aisle to get these safeguards put in place. And Jan spends a lot of time in D.C. as well with the Nicosi team and stuff about this very thing. Jan, do you have anything to add?
Sure. So the two bills, pieces of legislation I'd like to focus on. One is the Kids Online Safety Act. It's super simple. It really, the moment you walk out the door with your little phone, whether it's an iPhone or a Samsung or Google, all parent controls are on. Currently, they're all off. Now, for those of you that may have gamers at home, at PS4 or Xbox, for an Xbox, it takes 36 screens for you to get to parental controls. Now, I actually sat down with someone who is a computer programmer, and he took me through all 36 screens. Most parents have no idea how to get that. So it actually sets our parents and our families up to win. So then the kids and the parents can sit down and make that choice together. It's called the Kids Online Safety Act. And the other piece too is the No Trafficking Zone. Such a simple piece of legislation that makes sense. And it really prohibits trafficking and enticement and recruitment and grooming of children, either on school property or at a school event. My friend Jacqueline Aletto, who runs the No Trafficking Zone in Texas, out of Houston, they did a survey of teen survivors of human trafficking, and 55% of them said they were groomed and recruited in school or at school events. So this raises the fine for someone who is trying to exploit our children and can raise the time they spend in jail. And it really doesn't, it keeps our kids safe where they need to be safe, which is in school. The fact that trafficking and recruitment and grooming is happening in our school environment is horrific. And we've got to protect them. And this is one way to add an additional protection. And then, of course, the Earn It Act, which takes on CDA 230. And I think the biggest piece about this is it makes people nervous. If you go on Google and you Google Earn It Act, you're going to find out all kinds of stuff that's not the truth. In reality, what CDA, what Earn It Act does, and Lisa, I know you can speak on this too, is it's going to do a carve out of CDA 230 for online materials. It's going to require big tech to take child sexual abuse material down within 24 hours. And it's also changing the languaging from child pornography to child sexual abuse material, because pornography implies consent. And there is no child in the world that would consent to having their body be over-sexualized, have it be videotaped and uploaded to have a bunch of strangers see it.
And legally, children can't give consent.
Right.
So if you're under 18, you do not have the legal right to get your ears pierced, to get a tattoo, any of it. You certainly don't have the legal right to sell your body for sex. Yep. And so there can be no mistaking that children need to be protected and the law needs to protect them.
Absolutely. Let's open the phone lines real quick. 1-800, I'm sorry, that's my show during the day. 901-316-8404, 901-316-8404. Your thoughts, your comments, your questions, 901-316-8404. Again, 901-316-8404. Lisa, was that you that was about to speak up?
Yeah, I was going to say, I was going to give an example to highlight the need for the Earn It Act. We have a case right now against Twitter. It's still pending an appeal, and we're still very much in the middle of litigation, so I'm going to be a bit vague with my facts. But our case is founded by two 13-year-old boys who were on Snapchat, and they were catfished. They had a girl in their high school who was not a girl in their high school. It was a trafficker posing as a girl, committed sextortion. They fell prey to it. Images were exchanged, and they used the initial image to extort the children and say, we need more graphic images. We need more sexual material of the two of you together. And so these two boys were afraid, and they performed as dictated, and they shared more and more images. Eventually they cut it off. And after a lot of threats and whatnot unveiled, about 2 years later, a compilation video of all of those horrific moments was created and uploaded on Twitter. One of the children I represent almost killed himself. The other one almost dropped out of school. Thankfully, I can report that neither is deceased, because his mother was able to intervene and save his life. But what ended up happening was that they reached out to Twitter and they said, Twitter, this is child abuse material. This is child pornography. It's illegal. This is me. Take it down. And Twitter, after a delay, we have images of Twitter's response. And Twitter literally said, ultimately, please verify your identity and your age. So they did. They sent his identification. They said, you know, essentially can match the face in the video. And you can see, he says, I'm 16 now. I was 13 then. This is illegal. Please take it down. Twitter's response after 9 days, it's stunning. And I almost wouldn't believe it if I didn't have it in writing. They said, we don't find a violation of our policies and we will not be removing these images.
Oh my word.
That's Twitter. One of the biggest big tech agencies in the world.
And is that going to get any better under their current owner?
Yeah.
Well, I haven't seen a change yet, but we were also in the middle of an appeal. The reason I wanted to highlight this, though, is to Kathleen and Jan's point, why do we need the Earn It Act? Well, we've got CDA 230. Guess what the defense is by Twitter? We're immune from any kind of liability. You can't sue us, CDA 230.
That's why they have to be reinterpreted.
Absolutely. But our position is, no, you participated in a criminal act by possessing child pornography that was thrown out under CDA 230. That is currently on appeal right now. But the reason we need the Earn It Act is we need the Earn It Act to clarify, and Congress's intent was never to allow criminal acts to happen online with impunity and without recourse.
Wow. Let's go to the phone lines. They're lit up. Let's go to David, line one. David in Florida. Go ahead, David.
Hi, Brandon. How are you?
Good. Thank you for calling in.
Yes, I just wanted to just inform you the rabbit hole goes a whole lot deeper than a lot of people realize, especially where I live down here in South Florida. There are Chinese massage parlors that have opened up within the last 5 years. I mean, a ton of them on every single corner. And there's no other way to explain this to you, but every single one of them gives the happy ending, as some people call it. And this is sex trafficking by the CCP. They're young girls that they put in there are ordered to do this. And on other portions of your show, you've wondered where the DNA harvesting for the CCP, a lot of that comes from. And I'm just telling you that this is a huge industry down here, and it's a huge problem that is not mentioned, that goes unnoticed, and it's a huge problem. And I'm just one that's another aspect of sex trafficking we have right down here in South Florida.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you, David. Kathleen, you were shaking your head, so you seem to be aware of this.
Yeah. So I've helped change laws in Arizona to shut down massage parlors at 10 o'clock. I tell people if you can't get a massage in Arizona at 2 a.m., it's my fault. And I think it's important that we understand that these networks, there's a network in Florida, but it's attached to a network in Arizona and California. So he's exactly right. The Chinese are funding the Mexican and Central American cartels, and these massage parlors are part of it. And we have put restrictions on, and unfortunately, as a city does it, then it moves to another city. So our law enforcement is not, we don't have enough, but we used to have people that manage those. So we require certain signage, we require certain hours. But again, you have to be able to inspect and to go in there. So if they keep opening up like McDonald's, they're harder to control and take care of. So we've had that problem in Arizona.
Can you speak to this, please, Dan? I mean, What's the challenges with this for law enforcement?
Generally, law enforcement's not trained in how to deal with illicit massage businesses. There's about 16,000 currently across the United States. Every state in the country has increased in the last 5 years on the illicit massage business. And each illicit massage business has between 2 and 5 trafficking victims. So, I mean, that's a lot of victims. And in the United States, the estimate, we don't know for sure, but the estimate is somewhere between $4 and $5 billion a year that is made in the United States and then shipped back to China. There is hope. Allison and I at the Human Trafficking Training Center teach law enforcement all across the country in how to do this. When we were in Missouri, we were the first state to initiate a statewide program, what we refer to as the four-pronged approach. And in 9 months, we were able to shut down 45% of all the illicit massage businesses in our state. We will actually be in Naples in February teaching law enforcement there. And we will be in Atlanta in March teaching law enforcement there. I have talked to the Attorney General in Arizona. We've worked with like about 15 or 16 other states now across the country to handle the illicit massage businesses. So I think there's good news on the horizon as we continue to teach law enforcement how to handle these businesses. So I suspect over 2 or 3 years, I hope that as we get more and more officers trained, that we will be able to start shutting down a lot more of these. I know New Mexico just started a program that we helped with, and they're the second state to do a statewide program on the illicit massage businesses. So I'm excited to see what they're going to do in New Mexico. So I think there is hope on the horizon when it comes to helping the victims at the illicit massage businesses and also shutting them down across the country.
And are these a lot of these people immigrants that are now having to work off their fee for being brought to America, Dan?
So basically what happens is they're recruited by Chinese organized crime within China. They are brought over here to do the American dream, so to speak. They take advantage of the immigration system. They literally fly into the East Coast and the West Coast and literally walk off a plane and basically say, I'm from China. I'm a Christian. I'm not allowed to practice my religion. I'm here to seek asylum. And they get an asylum date that's 18 months or 24 months down the road. They never show up for that, and they disappear into America, and nobody looks for them until we find them in an illicit massage business in Des Moines or Flagstaff or Montgomery, Alabama, or Delaware, or wherever we find them at.
Let's go back
Southwest Florida. And so I just wanted to let you know that for the caller to know that Homeland Security just started up a task force in Southwest Florida, and specifically in Naples and Fort Myers, Henry Glades, and those counties, to look specifically at this and these sexual exploitation cases. So if you do have tips, you can call that in to the tip line, or you can file an anonymous report online at the Department of Homeland Security.gov. And there are agents that are there, and where Dan's going to be training in Naples, they've actually just formed this task force. So they are looking at it, and especially after Hurricane Ian. We just went through that horrific hurricane, and that is going to make the environment more conducive for trafficking to occur after any natural disaster. So we really have to have boots on the ground now. And we have, you know, promising going forward, this wonderful Homeland Security team, which I work with as well on trainings and things, that they will get involved.
Wow. Let's go to Kathy, line one from Pennsylvania. Kathy, thanks for calling in tonight, Kathy.
Hi, Brandon. Thank you for this show.
Thank you.
The question I have is, the one lady was talking about a bill they have in Congress about no grooming zones or whatever. Wouldn't they have to change our sexual education in schools? Because isn't that what they're doing? They're grooming our children.
The no trafficking zone is really holding exploiters accountable for grooming. And, you know, it's really interesting you say that. I was just having that conversation a couple of days ago with the public school system. They go hand in hand. Our children need to understand what their bodies, you know, the body parts, what they do and what happens. I had an intern that traveled up to New York to visit a friend, and came back a little distraught. And I said, what's wrong? And she said, well, my, you know, my friend's pregnant, you know, she's, you know, 22 years old. And I looked at her and I said, please tell me she knows how that happens. And she kind of shook her head and she goes, no, she didn't. I said, wait, are you telling me this 22-year-old girl did not know if point A gets to point B, that could equal C? She's like, no, she didn't know. So our kids need to understand how our bodies work.
So are you telling me, what you're telling me is they're teaching a lot about sex, but they're not teaching biology.
Correct. Correct.
Bingo.
They're teaching a lot about
sex.
And
they're learning about it on TikTok. I was at a church service on Sunday and the pastor goes, look, you think your kids don't know about this? They're on TikTok. They know about everything.
But the point I'm making, Kathleen, is when I was in school, we had biology classes, okay? Mm-hmm. And we all learned about reproductive and blah, 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 and all the other stuff that goes with biology. But I see the books that the parents are complaining about that are absolutely horrific, that are definitely pornographic. So they're teaching the kids about porn, but they're not teaching them about biology. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, they're teaching them about how to have sex, their sexuality, their gender. And unfortunately, they're teaching it at younger and younger ages. So when I had biology, it wasn't until high school. As Jan likes to say, the front of your foot, you have better ability to grasp it. There's certain content that is not appropriate for children under certain ages, and yet the school system seems to keep introducing it younger and younger ages. Why does a five-year-old need to understand what gender they are? What does that matter? When my granddaughter, who is six now, when she was five, she says, Mama, I'm a girl. That's all she really needs to know. She doesn't need to know about having sex with boys or that she wants to be a different gender or any of that, but they keep trying to introduce that curriculum. And California has the most audacious, ridiculous curriculum in the country. And they keep trying to implement that in other states across the country. We've had to fight it in Arizona several times. I think that we need to understand that our teachers are in a very great position to help our kids, but if they have bought into this hypersexualization and this trying to groom our children, which we see over and over again, we have to be aware of what's being taught in our schools and really make sure that we stick to the topics, not to somebody's political agenda or to someone's agenda to do harm to our children.
Absolutely. Let me ask, I don't know who to go to on this one, but this is obviously fitting right into the conversation, and that is the schools. What is it with all the female teachers that we read about now, pretty much on a weekly basis, somewhere in this country, that is arrested for having sex with their students? Can you tell me what is going on with that? Because Dan, I'm guessing you and I probably aren't too far in the same age of each other. That kind of thing was not going on when we were in school. What is going on with all these women having sex with their students? Almost again, on a weekly basis, you can find such a report. What is that about?
We have to understand that there are women that are traffickers. There are women that are predators. A lot of people want to believe that it's men, and they have to understand that there are women that are out there that are attracted to children and who are going to offend. And we have to put safeguards in place, like Darkness to Light has a wonderful campaign to help protect kids from child sexual assault. And I think that we have to realize that, because people, they want to think it's just men, and it's not.
Anyone else want to comment before we move on?
I would just say one more thing, and this is something, as a parent, what I have done. I've been incredibly clear with my school that there is no scenario in which my child should ever be alone with any adult. There's two teachers in every classroom. There's two teachers in aftercare. There's two teachers in every scenario. There's the ability to have somebody there. And I know there's a teacher shortage, but the bottom line is safety for the teachers from false allegations. It's safety for the students from something happening. A child should never be alone with an adult. It's not authorized by their parents.
Absolutely. And I would think that that would be common sense for the teacher themselves. I would think the teachers themselves would say, I'm not going to be alone with a pupil because all I got to do is be accused and then my career's over and I'm in big trouble criminally. I mean, why would any teacher ever be alone with a student, period?
Well, sadly, we live in a world today to where we really have to stop having that. We need to have someone present in the room with us as a chaperone. We do it in medicine. We do it with our sexual assault exams. And, you know, I work with survivors directly on my ranch, and I work with, you know, commercially sexually exploited youth, and we always have line of sight. We just always assume that someone could make an allegation. And sometimes it's just that they're confused or they're having flashbacks from prior trauma. So it may not be anything that they mean to do, but they can get confused in the moment. And I think that we just have to put those safeguards in place to believe that anyone's capable of being a predator. It can be your pastor. It can be your the CEO of a company. It can be anyone. It can be your physician. So we have to put those safeguards in place to protect the children and have these safe zones, which is one thing that Darkness to Light and others do in their training, is to let people know, don't do that. Don't assume anyone could be a predator. And me, as a survivor of sex trafficking and childhood sexual assault, I always have that spidey sense and kind of look at everybody through that lens that they have that potential.
Absolutely. Okay, let's start going to closing comments. Let's start with you, Lisa. What are some closing comments or things that have not been brought out you'd like the audience to know?
Just two things very quickly. And first, I want to say we've talked a lot about your kids being on social media. I want to point out something else that may not be readily apparent, but most gaming today has an internet component to it. It allows you to get online and talk to other people through the game. Fortnite does it. There's a whole bunch of them that do it. And one of the biggest danger zones anywhere where kids are, predators will be. So if you have your child and you're thinking, wow, I don't have any social media, I'm totally safe. If they're playing games that connect to the internet and allow and the features to allow them to chat with other players is on, people are trying to groom your children. There's a common thread right now where they'll do a sextortion scheme where they try to offer certain things in the game that would be of value to the players, and young kids don't know any better. So just be cautious. The other thing I would mention is just for an idea overall of how children should view the online. Colleges, part of the application practice now is they go look up your kid on social media. I have known students who have not gotten accepted to college or have lost their acceptance because they saw what was on their social media. So I tell all the kids that I work with is your social media is your resume. Post on it as you would a resume and like you're applying to a job today, because the history will remain online even if you delete it.
Wow. Wow. Kathleen?
Yeah, just briefly, I would just say I love what Lisa just said, but it's really important that you know where your kids are, where they're going, but also outside of the internet, who are they interacting with? Who are their friends? What are the boundaries? As a parent, and I had six teenagers at the same time, five girls, we were the house that people hung out at because I wanted to know who my kids' friends were. You should know who your children are hanging out with. Because when I get calls from parents whose children go missing, invariably there was a stranger that got introduced to the mix that the parent didn't know. And now we're trying to find their child. So you don't want to be helicopter parents. We want to raise our kids to be independent, but we also want our children to be safe. And as a parent, you need to be a parent, not their friend all the time. And it's okay to put boundaries in until their frontal cortex is fully developed.
Wow. Let's see. Kathleen, closing comment?
That was me.
Oh, I'm sorry. Tammy. Yeah. Tammy?
Yes, I just want people to realize the public health impacts of this pandemic of human trafficking and childhood sexual assault, and how we really have to stop mass producing child victims and rein in this virtual Wild West that we find ourselves in today. And there are many hospitals that have no protocol at all or any response to human trafficking. There are many states that do not have signs, that do not mandate training at all. And we are failing an entire population of individuals. much like in the 1980s when HIV and AIDS was a problem. And we knew that we had to act because we didn't know what we were doing and that people were dying. Well, because we acted, we passed legislation like the Ryan White Care Act, then that went from being a fatal condition to a chronic condition. And we are there now with this. We have to act as a healthcare community and as a society at large, because what society allows its children to be victimized as this one is, that says that we're at our lowest ebb when we're allowing this to happen to God's children. And that's what I would say is let's find a way to come together, whether Democrat or Republican, whether gay or straight, white or black, atheist, whatever, let's come together to protect children, because we have to act now. We can't wait any longer.
Dan?
Number one, don't let your kid have a smartphone.
Yeah, that's the recurring theme, which is so simple, right?
Most of what we talk about is not even relevant if your kid doesn't have a smartphone. If they don't have a smartphone, they're not on TikTok. Right? Second thing is we can pass lots of laws, and I think it's great that we're trying to work on legislation and other things, and we can train lots of people in the community. We can train hospitals. Hospitals are a funnel point. I agree with everything that Tammy said. Have to train hospitals. But if law enforcement's not trained properly, everything stops. The whole mechanism stops. Everything will stop. Doesn't matter if you got every nurse in America trained. If they report to law enforcement and law enforcement doesn't do anything, everything stops. And less than 10% of law enforcement in America have human trafficking training. Less than 10%. Let that sink in for a minute. Until we can train law enforcement properly, we're not going to be able to win this battle.
We also need to get control of our borders, right, Dan? We need to get control of our borders.
No. Amen. You have to have law enforcement because they are the ones who investigate. They're the ones to arrest. You have to have them at the center.
And I got a big response when I said we got to control our borders because the borders are driving the sex trafficking, right?
Yeah, they've definitely made it a ton worse. I mean, there's no doubt. And I think anybody, we all know it's worse. We all know, but what we don't know is how bad. And I don't think we're going to know that for the next several years.
Jan, quick.
Let's be honest. We don't have any idea how many people are even in our country or how many have come across or anything.
That's
exactly
right.
So it's going to be several years before we realize how bad it really, really is.
That is exactly right. Closing comment, Jan?
Sure. So here's what I want to leave people with. Learn more about this. There are tons of resources online. Project 25 has resources. Lisa Haba's law firm has resources. United Nurses Against Trafficking has resources. The Human Trafficking Training Center has resources. Paving the Way Foundation has resources. Be curious. Learn what human trafficking is, what online exploitation is. And the second thing is you got to take some action. I know this is an uncomfortable conversation. I really do. I get it. But we're all here having this conversation because you matter, your kids matter, and our country matters.
Absolutely. Thank you to all of you. By the way, we had a lot more calls, but we had a problem with our phone system. So I apologize to all those that wanted to get into the conversation but couldn't tonight. Thank you to all of you guys for joining us tonight. My friends, again, a topic that a lot of people don't want to talk about, and I know maybe we could have better ratings talking about something else. But at the end of the day, is it really about ratings and attracting the biggest audience over the most cutting edge news story today? Or is it really about, well, what we've been talking about, our children and protecting our children and the function and purpose of government, which is what? Reward the righteous and punish the wicked. Make a stable and just society so that the other institutions, family and church, can operate. So again, a topic we brought to you, not because we're looking for ratings, but because we're looking, well, to do what you expect of us, and that is to bring you the topics a lot of other people don't want to talk about, either because they're uncomfortable or because they're controversial. Either way, we're going to talk about it when it's important. Thank you for watching, for sharing it with your friends, and for supporting our broadcast by going to MyPillow.com and doing a lot of your Christmas shopping there. Please use that code B66, also at MyStore.com. Also, don't forget about us in your end-of-the-year giving. The WVW Foundation. It exists to proclaim the truth of a Christian worldview, to help people understand the times through the lens of a Christian worldview. If you appreciate what I do all throughout the year, bringing you free programming, most of which people put behind a paywall, my free documentaries, and so many other things that I do, including making my books available for my cost, our cost, on my bookstore. My foundation allows me to push out programming for free to people. Many networks pick up my programming. I don't charge them a thing because my foundation allows me to do that. You appreciate my foundation, which again is committed to helping people understand the times through the lens of a Christian worldview. Thank you for remembering it in your end of the year giving. WVWFoundation.com. I also have a church service every Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time right here. And we talk about the issues that are happening through the lens of the Bible. WVWFoundation.com. WVWFoundation.com. Thank you for watching. Take care.